सहनावत सहनौघुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। श्री भगवान उवाच ऊर्ध्वमूलमधःशाखम् अश्वत्थं प्राहुरव्ययम् छन्दांसि यस्य पर्णानि यस्तं वेद स वेदवित् अधश्चोर्ध्वं प्रसृतास्तस्य शाखाः गुणप्रवृद्धा विषयप्रवालाः अधश्च मूलान्यनुसन्ततानि कर्मानुबन्धीनि मनुष्यलोके अधश्च मूलानि अनुसन्ततानि कर्मानुबन्धीनि मनुष्यलोके एंड बिलो द डिफ्यूज रूट्स आर स्प्रेड that bind in the world of mortals. So these are the secondary roots. So now we have come born with ignorance, which is the primary root, and we are born with secondary roots. So this ignorance, you can say, itself has these two levels: primary ignorance and secondary ignorance. What is secondary ignorance means? His secondary roots is, as we said, ignorance basically causes in me a sense of limitedness, sense of inadequacy, sense of incompleteness. This is what ignorance does. That creates in me the desire to be adequate or desire to be complete. Because I don't feel good about myself, that's the reason why the objects of the world will attract me. The reason why the objects of senses and other things, they attract me, they tempt me, they create in me a desire to enjoy them, is because I feel inadequate within myself. It is not that the objects of the world have necessarily to create in me a desire for enjoyment. They don't have to. You can enjoy them without the desire. I mean, you know, you can enjoy the thing as it is. You need not enjoy just because it is desirable. But because I am sort of feeling a void within myself, feeling unhappy or sad within myself, that's the reason why the objects and things and beings, they are able to create in me an attraction and promise me happiness and create in me a desire to enjoy them. So how do I get rid of the void that I feel? That's why I need something. That's why I indulge into the sense objects or sense gratification, in order to become free from that inner void. So this is what ignorance does. When in fact there is fullness and wholeness, which is my nature, right there is created a sense of void. Then I am not happy, I don't feel good. I don't feel good about myself, I'm not happy. This feeling is created where in fact there is wholeness and completeness. This is most amazing thing. That is why the Vedantins use the word Maya. Maya is that which creates an appearance of what is not there. What is there in me really is completeness, wholeness. Whereas Maya creates an appearance of incompleteness. Where there is ananda or fullness, the Maya creates an appearance of void. But we don't know. Therefore we take it to be real. That feeling I have about myself, of feeling incomplete or void, that's what I take it to be real. And therefore, to become free from that sense of void or unhappiness, I resort to the enjoyment of sense objects. What you call sense gratification, ego gratification. All these different kinds of gratifications are nothing but our attempts to become free from a sense of inner unhappiness or inner void. So ignorance creates that inner void. And that in turn creates an attraction for the sense objects, because to become free from that void, I feel attracted towards them. I project happiness even where it is not. Because I am unhappy, therefore I have a tendency to project happiness even where it is not. And so the desire to enjoy them, and then the action to enjoy them. And so thus what happens in my mind, these tendencies are created. There is a tendency to look at the world as a source of happiness. I am born with that tendency also. Not only am I born with a tendency to look upon myself as incomplete, but I am also born with a tendency to look upon the world as a source of happiness. And that is what they call vasana sometimes, or samskara. So tendency, I am born with a tendency. Nobody has to teach me that, hey, you look for happiness, that I automatically look for happiness out there. It is that which creates actions, desires, actions, there is experience, further desires, further actions. And thus this tendency or samskara or the vasana of extrovertedness, they become stronger and stronger. What is extrovertedness? That I look out for a sense of fulfillment. I look out of myself. That is called extrovertedness. We don't here mean that a person is extrovert means he is an outgoing person. That is not what is meant by extrovertedness here. But what is meant is that I look out, outside of myself, seeking fulfillment. So I am born with that tendency. You call it tendency, call it vasana, call it samskara. There is a secondary root. Because these vasanas then create desires, and then create actions, and then create, and again these vasanas become further stronger and stronger and stronger. Because when you do these things repeatedly, then the cause becomes naturally very strong. So this, in the two verses, Lord Krishna thus described this tree of samsara, or described our life essentially. What is this life? Life is that I am born with ignorance. Ignorance creates in me a sense of limitedness or smallness or inadequacy. And that creates in me an unhappiness or dissatisfaction with myself. That creates in me a desire to become free from that dissatisfaction. And I look outside, the outside world, to fulfill that desire. But then the tendency of looking out keeps on growing. I feel that yes, world gives me happiness. So when I get a desirable object, I do feel happy, at least for a time being. So my conclusion that happiness is out there is further strengthened. My conclusion that I am unhappy by nature and happiness is out there seems to be further and further strengthened, confounded or verified from my experiences of feeling happy whenever I get something desirable. I do not realize that even when I am enjoying a desirable thing, it is not that thing that is giving me happiness, that happiness comes from my own self. That's called Maya. Where there is no happiness, Maya creates a sense of happiness. Where there is happiness, Maya creates the appearance of unhappiness. And where there is no happiness in the objects, it creates the appearance of happiness. And I feel also that seems to be right, because when I don't have something desirable, I feel unhappy, and when I have that something desirable, I do feel happy. So then my conclusion that happiness is out there is confirmed. And that conclusion becomes stronger and stronger. That's called vasana becoming stronger. The vasana or the conclusion of the tendency that I am not all right as I am, and that I can be all right or happy only if I have something, you know, of the world. These are the secondary roots. That's how the tree of samsara is described. Now we go to the third verse. Narupamasyeha tathopalabhyate. Nanto na chadir na cha sampratishtha. Ashvatthamenam suvirudhamulam. Asanga shastrena dridhena chitva. In the first lines, Lord Krishna says, Narupamasyeha tathoparabhyade. Asya samsara vrikshasya. Of this tree, Lord Krishna says that I described before you the tree of samsara. You will try to find it, you won't find it anywhere. Meaning that the rupa means a form. You do not really find that kind of a samsara. If you really examine samsara, then it disappears, really. You see, in India, when the village, the marriage, weddings take place in the villages, even today also, but particularly in the olden days when there was not electricity in villages, when the village, when the marriage procession comes in the evenings and you need light, so they bring petromax, which the people would carry on their head and walk on both the sides and to light up the path. So once the person who was in charge of this whole thing called one petromax man. He said, "Look, there is darkness there. Go there. Go where the darkness is." So petromax man went. And he went there and he kept on going round and round. Say, "What are you going round? I told you to, I couldn't stand there. So I don't find darkness," he says, Naturally you cannot find darkness when you go with light. Similarly also, if you really subject this whole tree to a scrutiny of what it is, then you find that really it doesn't have any form. It, you can't say it is there. Swamiji, that is what you say. We very much say that it is there. So you can't say it is not there also. We cannot say this tree of samsara is not there because we very much experience it. And experience is all this bondage and everything, and we are entangled in that, in fact. But then if you look at it from the standpoint of what the scriptures reveal. The scriptures reveal that all there is only wholeness, fullness, oneness, non-duality. As I said in the first class, that what is manifestation of, what appears limited is the manifestation of limitlessness. So what appears to be limited, if you probe into that, if you investigate into that, then it disappears. How long does it remain? as long as you do not inquire into that. You know that story of Swamiji, again of the weddings, you know, in the olden days, in India, the bride and the groom, so groom always has the upper hand, you know, being the boy, upper hand. And so these bride people, they must always take care of the groom and his party very well. So groom comes with his whole party from wherever he lives. And they will, the whole ceremony will last for a week, for a number of days. So they come with their party and they're all given nice places to stay and they're taken care of in every way. They're hosted very well. And whatever demands his groom makes, all the demands are satisfied. Oh, yes sir, yes sir. Because you want him to be pleased. You don't want him to be displeased because he can walk out. Even if he doesn't walk out, but he will take, you know, he'll keep this in mind, that grudge, and then he will make your daughter unhappy, you see. Because you are concerned about your daughter. So you always keep that fellow in good humor. Not only him, but his friends also. So here is a fellow who is a friend of this groom. He comes to the bride's party and says, I want a Coca-Cola, I want this, I want that. Says, yes sir, yes sir. So they would satisfy all his demands. This chap would go to the groom's party also. They would think that he comes from the bride's party. And he says, I want this, I want that. They satisfy that demand also because, you know, he should keep them also in good humor. So thus here is a person, he is an imposter actually. He poses as a friend of the groom when he goes to the bride's party and poses as a friend of the bride when he goes to the groom's party. And he has a good time. He becomes such a nuisance, in fact, that both of these, you know, both the in-laws are fed up. The groom's father and bride's father, both of them are fed up with this fellow. So one day they met with each other to find out. So the bride's father said, who is this person? Is your son's groom's friend? He says, no, he's not our friend. We thought he was your friend. We thought that he comes from Europe. He said, really? So when these two fellows met and started inquiring, this fellow is watching from a distance. He says, oh, they are met together. They inquire. He disappeared. So how long can the imposter last? As long as you do not inquire into that. Until then it becomes very real. So this whole samsara, which seems to be so difficult, Swamiji, tough time, you know, I understand. So we go through tough times, difficult. Lots of problems are there. As long as we give reality to this whole thing, what? Reality to my sense of limitedness. Reality that I require this world to make me happy. As long as these assumptions are not questioned, so long everything is real and we have a hard time dealing with this life. Most people have. Some people are lucky. Some people are not so lucky. But whatever. Well, lucky people also, everything is not always smooth, you know, there is always up and down. Because we have taken for granted what I am feeling about myself also is real, and what I am feeling about the world also is real, we never subject those conclusions to any scrutiny or inquiry, and that's how the life goes on, as though the world is real. So we cannot say it is unreal, the samsara cannot be said unreal or non-existent because we experience it. But when you subject to inquiry, what is this unhappiness? What is this sadness? Oh Swamiji, you know what it is. What is it? You know what it is, you know. Oh Swamiji, see. What is happening to my daughter? What is happening to my son? What is happening to my spouse? What is happening to this? You know, my daughter did not, you know, I am not able to get a matrimonial alliance. My son did not get admission in medical school. And I'm not going to sell my house. And all that makes me unhappy. Why should that make you unhappy? What do you mean it makes me unhappy? Why? Because you have concluded that happiness is there only when all these things are in certain order, then only I can be happy. But that's your assumption. That just because your daughter will get matrimony and alliance, that so in absence you're unhappy, and if it happens you'll be happy. Who knows? Who knows if the person is good, he's all right. Who knows that being not married is necessarily bad? Whatever. But said, there is nothing can be said to be the cause of unhappiness. As our Swamiji says, this fellow is divorcing his wife, and the proceedings go on for quite some time. He is waiting for the time when he can divorce this person, so that he is only waiting for somebody else. His neighbor also is waiting. When this woman is divorced, so that he can get married to her. Same thing is looked upon differently by different people. Same events. Somebody is happy, somebody is unhappy. So it's difficult to say what is the cause and what is the effect. But we cannot say that a given thing is the cause of unhappiness. If it is so, it should cause unhappiness to everybody. You can say that the sugar is sweet because it tastes sweet to whoever tastes the sugar. And whenever you taste the sugar, at any place. Can you say that a given thing is unhappiness for everybody at all, even to you also? It's not so. Unhappy, what makes me unhappy in the given situations can very well make me happy in the different situations also. Thank God this was there, I was trying to get rid of something and then all of a sudden I realized, it was good that I had it. So these are all nothing but our subjective projections. There is no cause out in the world for happiness or unhappiness. It is my perception of myself, that's all. If I feel good about myself, I'm happy. If I don't feel good about myself, I'm unhappy. It depends on my perception of myself. So what the world does is manage to create that perception. If by your behaving the way you do, you make me feel bad about myself, I feel unhappy. And by behaving the way you do, if you make me feel good about myself, I feel happy. One person, by praising me, can become source of happiness. And by criticizing me, can become source of unhappiness. So this person always praises me and I'm so happy to have that person around me. Then somebody told me, that Swami, you don't know what this person says behind your back, When I heard that, I became very unhappy. So now when I see that person, I don't feel happy. When I don't believe his words now. But it's my perception of myself. And therefore there is no such thing as samsara. There is no such thing as bondage, really. Because freedom is my nature. How can there be bondage when there is freedom? Bondage is just a notion. That's all it is. As long as that notion that I am bound is not subjected to scrutiny. I am bound. Who is the I that is bound? I was born. Who is the I that was born? The body was born. Who says you are born? I will die. The body will die. Who says that you will die? I'm unhappy. Unhappiness is in mine. How do you say you are unhappy? As this man comes to Swamiji and says, Swamiji, I'm restless. Swami says, you are not restless. You're all silence. Swami, I'm restless. He gets more excited. Swami becomes cooler. You're all silence. Swamiji, I'm restless. You're all silence. Just to tease him, that's all. He became so angry, he says, Swami, from Swami he came to Swami. If you repeat this once more, there will be two fellows restless, understand? So Swami says, how do you say you are restless? I know I am restless. How do you know you're restless? My mind is restless. Your mind is restless. Who are you? You are the knower of your restless mind. The knower is always different from what is known. This flower is an object of my perception. I am perceiver of this flower. I am the perceiver is different from object of perception. So then who are you? The restlessness is in mind. But who are you? The eliminator of restlessness, unaffected by restlessness. So thus we inquire into who is the unhappy person. Unhappy person doesn't remain. Chidananda rupaha shivoham shivoham. We don't inquire there. As Ramana Maharshi says, aham ayam koto bhavati chinvataha. I am aham koto bhavati. This ahankara of the ego, the happy unhappy self, what is this nature? Where does it arise from? Moment you inquire into that, it drops. Because it's imposter. The ego is imposter, poses always as belonging to this party and that party until we don't inquire into that. When you inquire, what is the ego? It drops off. Leaving there the consciousness in its place. So really, you cannot say that samsara is. Why you cannot say? Because when you inquire into that, it disappears. You cannot say it is not because as long as you are not inquired, as long as we don't have knowledge, it is so real to us. Lord Krishna says, narupamascheha tathopalabhyate. As it was described in the first two verses, in that manner its form does not obtain here because the two verses describe samsara as though it was real. But it's not so. Nor it is non-existent because you are experiencing it as long as there is ignorance. Nanto na chadihi. When, Swamiji, when did this begin? Now this is another question that you always have. You say that this body, I am born as a result of my actions in the past birth. But then why did I perform actions in the past birth? Because of actions in the previous births. Why did I perform actions in the previous? Because of the previous births. So now he says, okay, but what about the first birth? They think that they ask such a question, you know, to baffle the Swami, you know. But Swami, in the first birth there was no karma. Then how can there be birth? So the Swami says, there is no first birth. There is no beginning. Nanto na chadihi. Nobody can say when did this thing begin because there is no beginning. Swami, that's avoiding answer. It is avoiding answer. But you give me a different answer. People get frustrated with these kind of answers, you know. That's not an answer. You give me a different answer. It began 13.5 billion years ago, Swamiji, when there was a big bang. Was there nothing before the big bang? Nothing at all. But something cannot come from void. Something must be there. You know, in the big bang cannot take place without a reason. Why did the bang take place? Something must be there. We call it avyakta, we call it unmanifest. Has to be there. Before manifestation came, it was unmanifest. And before that it was manifest and unmanifest. That's how the cycles go on. Like the sleep is unmanifest. When I wake up, becomes manifest. Again I go to sleep, unmanifest. Again I wake up, manifest. From manifestation to unmanifestation, unmanifestation to manifestation. From unmanifest to manifest is called creation. From manifest to unmanifest is called dissolution. So mind personally dissolves when I am fast asleep, and again it gets created when I wake up. Again it gets dissolved. Again it gets created. Dissolvement doesn't get destroyed. It goes into causal state. So understand, Vedanta says that there is no such thing as beginning of anything. the famous Srikanareg. But in Vedanta we say Bijankura Nyayaha, not chicken egg. Bijankur. Was the seed first or the sprout first? The sprout cannot be unless the seed is there, but seed cannot be unless the sprout is there, is it not so? So if you stretch that inquiry, is the seed first? No, Swami, seed is there because the sprout was there. Why the sprout was there? Because seed was there, because sprout was there. If you go on, it is beginningless. There's no beginning. In your mind, you can decide beginning of anything and tell me. Next time we meet, Swami, I have discovered the beginning of such and such thing. You tell me. There is no beginning at all. So Bada Swami used to say, says, you know, what is the unit of time? What's the unit of time? Second. This fertile brain, come up with this idea, came with this idea. Second. So you see, the time also, the unit is second, not first. There is no first. There is no first. The Swamis are amazing creatures, I don't know how their brains work, it's amazing. Nanto na chadihi. There is no beginning. Antaha, there is no end also. Because this goes on. This chain of seed and the sprout will go on forever. When will it come to an end? When the seed, the sprout will come. Sprout and the seed will come. Seed and the sprout will come. It will always go on and on. Nanto na chadihi. Antaha. It does not have an end, na adihi, it does not have a beginning, na sampratishtha, does not have a middle. What is middle? Middle is only when the beginning and end is there, that's why it's called middle. There's no middle also. Meaning that it is indescribable, it cannot be said to be so and so, meaning it is mithya. This is a definition of mithya. This is a description of mithya, it's not definition, description of mithya. What cannot be said to be so and so is mithya. Like our famous, what is this? Swami, it's a pot. It's a standpoint. Pot is a standpoint. Somebody can say it is clay. Is not so? Because take away the clay from this object called pot, when I take the clay away, nothing remains there. Therefore, what is it? Is it pot or clay? The weight that is in my hand is of clay or pot? Is a clay. What I'm touching also is clay, what I'm smelling also is clay. Where is pot? Take away the clay, there's no such thing as pot. So, pot is what? Mithya, dependent entity. It is superimposition. So when there is no beginning, there is no end, there is no middle also. That's a sampratishtha. So this is how the description of the, having described the tree in the first two verses, as though it is real, Lord Krishna dismisses the reality of samsara in the first line of the third verse. It is very important. As long as it is given reality, so long it will never end. Ashvattam prahu avyayam. In the same line, Lord Krishna described the samsara as ashvattam, meaning that it is perishable, and avyayam, meaning that it is everlasting. It is perishable in the wake of knowledge, and everlasting in the wake of, in the realm of ignorance. So what happened is, on account of lack of inquiry, on account of not inquiring into our conclusions, like the tenth man, he has concluded, I am not the tenth man. Tenth man is lost. I am not the tenth man. He would never inquire into whether this conclusion is right or not. I am not the tenth man. He feels very sad. The tenth man is lost. And so he keeps on searching for the tenth man, the action is there, result is there, action is there, result is there. He doesn't find it, so another action to search for it, doesn't find it, another action to search for it. When will the search be complete? In case of the tenth man, when will the search be complete? Never. The search will go on as long as he does not scrutinize his conclusion that I am not the tenth man. It's a conclusion. The only reason for conclusion, he doesn't count himself. Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He counts all the boys, excluding himself, and concludes that there are only 9. 10th is lost. I am not the 10th man. It is ignorance which causes the idea I am not the 10th man, which causes unhappiness, which causes action of searching. And then, you know, this can go on and on. This search for the tenth boy can prolong for how long? Any length. Then they require some kind of help for searching. So let us get a bicycle so that we can go faster. Let us get a motorbike. Let us get a boat in the water. Let us have a helicopter. And so for searching for the tenth man, you can keep on, you know, you can make the search very technical, high tech. All high tech is for searching for the tenth man, no? That search will never end as long as that conclusion does not go, because the whole thing is based on false conclusion. In our life also, search for happiness is based on the false conclusion that I am unhappy or that happiness is away from me, different from me. And unfortunately, that conclusion never goes. Even the whole world is doing that, Swamiji. The whole world is doing it. But the majority doesn't make truth. And so we also go on. And more disappointment. But you never give up. If you give up, you're burnt out, then you can give up, but then do something else. But giving up, nobody ever questions the conclusion upon which this search is based. Ashvatha, second line says, Ashvatthamenam suvirudhamulam. This Ashvatha, the tree of samsara, suvirudhamulam. The roots are well entrenched. The roots are well entrenched. The roots are become very strong, suvirudham. Secondary roots. And primary, ignorance. Ignorance and the vasanas and the samskaras and ragadveshas caused by that and the karma and karmaphala, that thing has been going on from the time beginningless, and the roots have spread so far and deep. So, ashvatthamenam suvirudhumulam. This tree, the roots are very well entrenched, meaning that we are very well entrenched in our conclusions. And every time we are born with the same conclusions, and in our life also, whatever we do, those conclusions become even more entrenched. That I am unhappy, that conclusion becomes more and more entrenched because I don't find happiness. It seems to come and go. Like this traveler who was traveling once upon a time in India from one village to the other, a long distance. He walked for 3 or 4 hours from the morning. It was noontime, very hot. He was passing through a forest. He was tired, exhausted, hungry, thirsty, looking for a place for rest. And he found a very beautiful lake. He was very happy to see the lake. Cool, clean, pure, delicious water. So he wanted to wash his face and drink water to quench his thirst. So he goes to the lake and looks down to get some water in his palm so that he can wash his face. And what does he see? He finds a golden necklace and at the bottom of this lake. A golden necklace? His hunger is gone, thirst is gone, everything is gone. Now, the immediate agenda is what? How to get that? He looks around, he happily finds that there is nobody around. So his find will be his own, you know, that there is nobody to share. He plunges into water, catches hold of that golden, this necklace. It comes in his hand and it goes away. Again, he plunges, that seems to come in his hand, and again he loses it. So many times he attempted. He got tired, disappointed, sitting on the lake shore again, on the edge. What to do? How to get that? And fortunately for him, another traveler came along who also was looking for a place of rest. And this man saw him. Now he's very happy that somebody is coming along. He says, come, come. I'll show you something very important. But before that, there's one condition. You promise me. He says, what? That we should share equally whatever we get. It's okay. What is it? He says, come here. Look down. Oh, golden necklace. Second fellow is also very happy. He says, why did you wait for me? Why didn't you get it by yourself? He says, I've been traveling so long, you know, look at my whole body is wet. I've been plunging into water trying to get that necklace. It seems to come in my hand and disappear and goes away. I don't know what to do. Maybe you have a better way of finding it. When he heard this story, then the second fellow had, now he questioned. Unless you question the conclusion, nothing happens in life. And he looked up, and sure, a golden necklace is hanging on the branch. And what you see in the water is a reflection. Taking the reflection to be real. And you keep plunging. It seems to come into your hand. So also happiness is there in the world. It looks like that. We chase the happiness. Seems to come in our hand. And again, it's very elusive. Seems to go away. You try again, again. Like searching with the tenth man, something similar. And so, Ashwattham, this is going on from the time beginningless. Ashwattamenam suvirudamulam. Therefore, our samskaras, our vasanas have become very strong that I am no good, that I am unhappy, I am inadequate, that the happiness is in the world, and that all of these has become very. Nobody has to teach all these things to us because we have brought this with us. Ashwattamenam suvirudamulam. And therefore, these ragadvesha that are created are also very, very strong. They are binding. Because something promises me, they will make me happy, therefore I am attracted to that. There is an attachment, raga, and then something comes in the way, there is an aversion for that. So, as I said earlier, relationship is raga and dvesha. So these likes and dislikes, or attachment and aversions, they are become very strong. I am entangled. Ashwattamenam suvirudumulam. This tree of samsara has its roots very well entrenched. What should you do? You have to cut asunder. That's why it is called vriksha. Vrashanat vrikshaha. So that which can be felled is called tree. What is tree? That which can be felled. You have to fell this tree. How? Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. Drudhena asanga shastrena chitva. Chitva cutting asunder by the axe of what? Asanga shastra. Shastra means the weapon. Astra and shastra, there are two kinds of things, you know. Astra and shastra. So astra is a weapon that you can throw. And shastra is a weapon that you hold in your hand. It is shastra, like a sword. Like an axe in this particular case, because you cut asunder the tree with an axe. Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva, having cut asunder. So chitva is a gerund, chitva, having cut asunder. That's a complete kriya. It's completely having cut asunder. How? Asanga shastrena drudhena. So Lord Krishna calls it shastra or the weapon and gives two adjectives, asanga and drudhena. Asanga shastrena. Why? The acts which of asangata. What is asanga? With the weapon of detachment or dispassion. Sangha. Sangha means attachment. Asanga means detachment. Call it sangha, call it spruha, attachment, attractions, temptations, which everybody has. So again, we have brought with us these vasanas or tendencies of attraction towards the world, that is brought with us. As Kathopanishad says, Paranjikhani Vyatruna Swayambhuhu, Ishvara has created our sense organs and mind extrovert. Meaning that we have come with a tendency that there is a natural attraction that the sense organs and mind have for the sense objects. A natural affinity. So therefore the mind always runs out. But the Sangha, that mind which runs out has to be again, its flow has to be turned completely. The mind which is outward looking has to be made inward looking. Because otherwise you will never see the self. To see the self you must look where the self is. Say tentatively self is within. Although it's, you know, within is also in a relative sense, but self is within, not without. If we make divisions of within and without, then we can say that self is within, not without. So mind is always looking outward, without. That mind has to be turned around to look inward. Look towards one's own self. So mind that has a, right now a nature of always looking at things other than myself, the nature of the mind has to change completely, has to be turned around. It is not just looking, meaning that it is a one-shot deal. It is a sadhana. It is a long-time pursuit of changing completely the tendencies of the mind. The mind which has the natural tendencies of running out. Whenever I feel a little unhappy, what do? Engage in some activity. I feel bored, so engage in activity. I never look at myself, you know, because I'm already bored with myself. Therefore, I want some activity. You have some kind of a computer. Fortunately, you have all kinds of iPads, etc., you know. And therefore, you find out some games and play. Entertain yourself. So, for entertainment, I'm always looking out. So, this is a tendency. Tendency is whenever there is a sense of unhappiness, the mind automatically runs out seeking happiness, seeking satisfaction, seeking gratification. This has become the nature of the mind. This nature has to be changed. This is called asanga. Sangha means attachment or desires. Desires which arise from the wrong conclusion. Wrong conclusion on myself, that I am unhappy and that happiness is out there. It is these two sets of conclusions that make my mind always run outward. So this is called sangha, attachment, which causes desires and action and the result. Asanga shastrena drudhena sitva. This asanga shastra, or the weapon of detachment, should become drudhena, must become very firm. So, says Shankaracharya, so, what is asanga shastra? Putra vitta lokeshanadibhya vyutthanam. Asanga. Vyutthanam, rising above. In Vedanta, the desires are said to be threefold, putra, vitta and loka. Desire for progeny, desire for wealth and desire for the other world, heaven. But in the modern context, you can say that the desire for wealth, the desire for... So that is called artha, meaning the desire for wealth and security. Kama, desire for gratification. And loka, desire for ego. So kama is desire for sense gratification. Loka is desire for ego gratification. So first thing that catches my attention is my need of the senses. Having satisfied them reasonably well, and I'm not, that process is not over. Next, ego draws my attention. No, ego seeks gratification. So now enough money, I may have enough entertainment, pleasure. Now what I want? I want to be well known. I want name and fame and power. So this name, fame, power bring about gratification of ego. So this gratification, asanga shastrena, so even if I reason with my mind, I have to reason with my mind. It's called viveka. Vairagya is a product of viveka. This raga, attachment, what is vairagya? Detachment. Call it asanga, call it... So in the olden days, these desires were classified into three categories, putra, vitta, loka, or artha, kama. So kama means the pleasure or gratification. Artha has two levels, wealth and security, and second is the name, fame and power. Vyutthanam, rising above these desires. By viveka. Inasmuch as these desires are product of aviveka. What is viveka? Discrimination or seeing things as they are. That is viveka. What is aviveka? Seeing them as contrary to what they are. So seeing the self as happiness is viveka. Seeing the world as devoid of happiness or unhappiness is viveka. But aviveka, seeing the world as a source of happiness or unhappiness, both. To look upon something as a source of happiness or something else as unhappiness, both of these are aviveka or non-discernment. Viveka can be said to be discriminatory discernment. So, we have, every time the mind comes up with a desire, we have to make the mind see how this desire is a result of aviveka or non-discernment, wrong conclusions, and make the mind see what the right conclusion is. How the self is adequate. Hey mind, you don't have to run out there. You are adequate. Look at, just calm down. Oh, I'm not adequate. Just calm down. Your very agitation deprives you of the adequacy. So calm down, relax. Calm down. Then you can see that you're adequate. And look, the world neither has happiness nor unhappiness. Both of these are projected by you. It's called viveka. Asanga shastrena drudhena. This viveka, Shankaracharya says, is like a stone. Weapon or this axe has to be sharpened again and again, So because when you cut the tree, even a barber also, keeps doing that with his razor. Nowadays you don't have that, but then, in the olden days, even when he shaves the hair or something. Or a wood cutter, so when he cuts, then after a few strokes the edge becomes blunt, so you must again sharpen it, sharpen it, sharpen it. And understand that, so drudhena, that weapon must be very strong, at the same time it must be sharp. By that, cut asunder the tree of samsara. We will continue our discussion in the next class.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Balarayanam Sutra Bhashya Krutau Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punah Ishvaro Guru Ratmedi Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vajyapta Dehaya Dakshinamurtaye Namah Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Bhyo Namah Hari Om.
Yes, Vasudhatma ji has something to say for a few minutes.
Just a few events, those who are going to come up in this week and next month, please note down. The imminent one is the Memorial Day retreat, May 25th through May 28th. Swamiji is going to conduct that. Of course, you know, in-house accommodation is full, but if you can make your own arrangements outside, you are welcome to attend all the classes and join the whole program with us. That's May 25th to 28th. After that, we have an interesting seminar that is International Jyotish Workshop. Starts on June 1st and ends on June 10th. These astrologers are going to discuss a lot of interesting topics. So in the faculty, there's Yogi Karve, Gayatri Devi Vasudev, Dr. K.S. Charak, and Vinay Aditya, and so many people are going to come for this seminar, and you can... Those who have been studying astrology, those who are interested to continue their astrology study, they can take advantage of this seminar. Couple of topics I would like to share with you. One is important economic and political trends in 2012 for USA, India and China. So they are going to discuss that, and Dr. Charak is going to discuss studies on diabetes. So there are other lot of related astrological topics are going to be discussed in this seminar, and you can, those who are interested, please you can join. Also, you can get your chart checked whether you are destined to get moksha or not. That's a part. Anyway, then let's move on. The second one is Swamiji is again, apart from conducting classes here and retreats, Swamiji also extensively goes for outreach programs. So Corning people have arranged Swamiji's talk, Corning Radisson. That's on Saturday, June 2nd. Those who are staying in that area, they can attend, and also friends of yours, those who are looking for such programs, please do inform them. And we have made flyer available. All the details are in this flyer, please have it and give this information to all your friends. After that, Arshavidya Gurukulam and Sri Venkateshwar Temple, Bridgewater, New Jersey, again have arranged a yearly public talk, Swamiji, and the topic is Surrender and Freedom. This will be scheduled to be held on June 7th, starts on Thursday, June 7th, then June 8th, that's on Friday, and it will be concluded on Saturday, June 9th. Again, it's at Sri Venkateshwara Temple, Balaji Mandir, Atorium Bridgewater Temple. Again, all the flyer will give you all the details. If your friends are looking for such opportunities, please inform them. And June 8th also, New York people have arranged something. I don't have that flyer. I will share that information when you come for the next weekend class. That's going to be on June 3rd. Then Swami Pratek Bodhananji also still here, and he has been going for outreach program. Syracuse Sadhana Center have arranged his talks in Syracuse on June 2nd and June 3rd. So those who are in that area, you can try to attend his talks. These are the events for this month and next month. And when you come for the June 3rd, if anything is added to our list, I will share with you. Thank you.